Hello, and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else, a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities around the world. I'm Ray Lang, Associate Professor of Computer Science at Xavier University of Louisiana. And now, let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else. Hello, everyone. We're here with Dr. Eric Bain-Selbo of Western Kentucky University. He is head of the Department of Philosophy and Religion and co-director of the Institute for Citizenship and Social Responsibility. His research spans the disciplines of philosophy and religious studies and focuses primarily on social and political ethics and cultural criticism. He's author of numerous articles and three books, Game Day and God, Football, Faith, and Politics in the American South, Judge and Be Judged, Moral Reflection in an Age of Relativism and Fundamentalism, and Mediating the Culture Wars, Dialogical Virtues in Multicultural Education. He's a frequent presenter at conferences, including the American Association of Colleges and Universities, the Association for Integrative Studies, and the American Association of State Colleges. Hello, Dr. Bain-Selbo.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
Good. You have an awful lot to say about the importance of values-based education for strengthening democratic values. And we hear a lot of cheerleading from politicians and state legislatures and such when they're debating funding for colleges about value of critical thinking and creative problem solving and thinking outside the box. But it seems that when students are genuinely educated as critical thinkers, when that happens, you can't really control where these critiques go. And so critiques of the established order will emerge that offend the very same people that are demanding critical thinking. The question is, how did we get here? And more importantly, how do we break this paradox?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, I do think that there is a very natural sort of generational conflict. And there's always been one, always will be.
Oh, that's timeless.
Right. And we want our students to not simply accept the way that things have been done in the past. We want them to critique current practices. We want them to critique the traditions that have been handed down to them in order to fully engage them, whether those traditions are economic, political, religious. I mean, I think the best way for a person to be a good Catholic is to critically engage the tradition. And not simply blindly accept it. So we in the academy, and I think you're right, a lot of legislators will, as you know, say this as well. You know, we want these critical thinkers. Of course, you're absolutely correct that at the point that they then become challengers to the way things have been done in the past, certainly those in the older generations might not take too kindly to that. I guess I don't have a whole lot of advice or many thoughts about what to do about the older generation that's stuck in the mud. But I certainly would not want us to take that potential conflict as I don't actually see that conflict as a problem, I guess, is what I'm getting at. I see that as a fruitful conflict and a necessary one that will always occur. You know, we want students to think outside the box, and those boxes have been handed to them, and they are going to create new boxes. And I think as educators, our role is to point out the boxes, both new and old. I get in classes that I have and we're grappling with moral issues or things in popular culture, and you know, it's just as important for students to have it pointed out to them that, you know, well, you're thinking in a very constrained way within a particular box that has been handed you not by your parents but by your peers or by you know, the culture industry or whatever, and you need to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, you're just as constrained as those in generations older than you that may be constrained by their boxes. I find that conflict to be very fruitful. And I think in a discussion, in any sort of discussion that we might have about values, it's a necessary conflict. I mean, I do think that we need to critically engage the values that have been handed down to us. And wherever we settle in the end, we need to be able to take that very beneficial distance from our own values in order to critique them. I don't think that value formation is a kind of endpoint where, okay, we've got it settled. Now I know my values. If you're not constantly self-reflective about your values, then I think that's where we end up with problems.
Now, it seems to me that implicit in any discussion of values is maybe a notion that some values are good and others are not. How do you respond to critics of higher education and want to say, oh, well, we're just trying to make everyone liberal?
Oh, I know. Yeah, there was, and just to you know, full disclosure, I mean, I'm not, I don't need to kind of talk about my own political positions, but I do, I am a fan of political talk shows, and I try to watch channels that represent both sides. I was recently watching The O'Reilly Factor, and there was a story about a Michigan State professor who a student, I think, secretly recorded him somehow. You know, taking some very strong political positions. Okay, and it was all part of the narrative that, you know, the academy is run by a bunch of leftist communists and
yeah,
they're all indoctrinating our kids into this left-wing politics and stuff like that. Excuse me. And as soon as I saw the promo for this piece that was coming out, oh, no, here we go again. Because these things come up all the time, right? And I do think that, I think that, I don't think that the academy is, you know, swarming with a bunch of communist sympathizers who are attempting the overthrow of the American government.
Well, swarming might not be the right word. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I think what the mistake made in among those outside the academy and in the popular culture, I think the mistake made is that academics do like to question things. And the more conservative position often is to embrace tradition. And I think a lot of people in the academy think those traditions are great, though we can also critically assess them, and maybe we need to revise them, or maybe there's parts of them that we need to throw out. I think sometimes the academy is engaged in just critical evaluation of certain practices and institutions in our culture, and that's perceived as left-wing.
Right.
It's really just critical reflection. Right?
Okay.
Now to your question, I mean, I think many of us struggle with this in the classroom. I mean, I teach at a university that's in the South. You know, most of our students are from small towns. It's relatively a conservative population. And, you know, I think as teachers, we can sometimes take an effort to be, you know, non-political, non-partisan too far, and we end up with almost the reverse, which is a kind of, well, everybody's entitled to their opinion.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a terrible place for a classroom to end up. I mean, and I, you know, of course, if you're teaching chemistry, you're probably not going to end up there. But if you're in teaching in the humanities or maybe even the social sciences, I think it's okay for a faculty member to make arguments about certain values and the priority of those values over others, and why that's a reasonable, and have reasonable arguments for it, and lay that out, and be self-conscious about it. I think classrooms that end up where, you know, it's just kind of a free-for-all and everybody gets to, you know, voice their opinion, and it's kind of thought, well, you can't question anybody's opinion, I think that's a terrible classroom.
Well, it doesn't. That doesn't seem to me to serve any purpose unless students are supported and encouraged in backing up an opinion.
Right.
There is a sense that I've seen students can just sort of end a sentence with, well, and that's just my opinion, and the implication is, well, end of discussion.
Right.
But no,
exactly.
That's the beginning of the discussion.
Right, and I think that I absolutely agree with you. And I think that we live in a culture, a political culture right now, where one of the things that faculty can do that will be a real benefit to our students is to remind them that there are facts. That it's not all opinion, that it's not all spin. We used to have, until some recent budget cuts, we had a program here on campus where you could have your students get a free subscription to the New York Times 5 days a week, or
nice.
For however many days you wanted. And it was a great program. It was kind of expensive, and so it got...
Yeah.
Latest round of budget cuts, which is a whole other value question. But the, you know, it was, I was amazed in a number of my classes over the last couple of years at how many students perceived the New York Times as another instrument of spin. You know, that there's not facts. You know, so I had an ethics. This is even more extreme. I had an ethics class a couple years ago, and so we were doing issues kind of at the end of the course, and one of them was on the environment and climate change and things like that. And I had a report from, I think it was the National Academy of Sciences. I think that's what it is. And this was a report on climate change from leading climatologists, scientists from around the world, right? Government-funded study.
Mm-hmm.
And even that didn't carry the weight that I thought it should. You know,
yeah.
That, you know, if we can't put some weight on that, and I don't want people to just take these things and say, oh, well, it, you know, must be God's truth then. But it certainly has to carry more weight than the latest thing you saw on the internet on some wacky website.
Right.
Know? And so I really do think that we, you know, part of a discussion about values is having good facts. And it's just critical that, you know, to get back to your point about, you know, when students are taking a position in class, and I force my students to take lots of positions. You know, I just think it's part of their maturation process.
Naturally.
When they do, though, they have to back it up. I think a faculty member should never let them stop, like as you said, at, well, that's my opinion though. Well, fine, but if you have nothing, if you have no argument to defend it, and you have no good evidence to provide in that argument, then you're not contributing to the conversation.
It's what I try to do sometimes. I'm in the computer science department, but
okay.
I've occasionally taught in our freshman orientation course, which is a year-long introduction to liberal arts education.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've gotten this sometimes, and I've tried to break through that by saying, well, that's fine that this is your opinion. I don't like to, you know, come down too hard.
Right.
But
oh, sure.
Unless you can back that up, you're not going to persuade anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And unless if you want to have a persuasive position and make an impact, you have to have more than just, well, that's just my opinion.
Right.
I have kind of a devil's advocate kind of question here, and of course it well known the kind of pressures that colleges face from government and industry to, you know, prepare students for the workplace, which, you know,
right.
sometimes can be a euphemism for training people to follow directions without question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, given these sorts of pressures and all the things that colleges have to do to give students, especially students from working class backgrounds, give these students a fighting chance to earn a decent income and earn a living, is it too much to expect that we also, you know, try to prepare them to be, you know, social critics? So the question is, what gets taken off the plate to make room for the kind of instruction we're talking about?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned in the introduction, which thank you for that. I've been involved here on our campus. I was one of the co-founders of our Institute for Citizenship and Social Responsibility, and I've continued to work with that unit since.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very involved in the American Democracy Project, which is an initiative of the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. And one of the big issues there in the American Democracy Project, this question has been raised, you know, if we're going to teach students all these democratic values, right, you know, what's going to get left out of the curriculum?
And this is at a time when, you know, accrediting agencies, both for campus-wide accrediting agencies like SACS and discipline-specific accrediting agencies are coming in with more and more demands for content in specific areas.
Yeah, and I don't think that my general approach to this is, and I think this is even true with, I mean, on our campus, for example, you know, nursing students have a very
right.
constrained curriculum.
Right.
Electrical
Perfect
engineers,
example.
Yeah. But they all still have to complete our general education program. And though general education programs in some cases get whittled down some, and there's pressures, all the pressures that you just described. And in fact, our new program here on campus, which will be implemented next year, has fewer hours than the one that it's replacing.
Sure it does.
But students still have to complete that, and I think that that's really an opportunity in the general education program is really an opportunity for a university to say, to connect with its mission. I mean, certainly part of the mission of any institution of higher learning is to give students those skills that they need to go out and do the things in the world that they would like to do in their career. And that will contribute to the society. I'm
right.
all for that, no doubt about it. But there's also things, and I've done this. I've gone through lots of university mission statements. They
yeah.
always will say things about the common good, giving back to the community, to the country, serving democracy. I mean, the language just drips all over these mission statements.
Mm-hmm.
General education seems to me to be the place where you can really stamp an identity to your institution through your general education program. Because the students are going to take it anyway, and here's your opportunity to say, look, we've said we're committed to democratic values. Where do we find that in our curriculum? I think the problem with a lot of that language, well, not with the language, but at least in the implementation, is that faculty and administrators, we've always had this idea that, well, you know, college-educated people will just be better citizens. And we don't know how that's going to happen.
Somehow, by magic,
it's going to happen. And actually, by magic, somehow it does to some degree. I mean, if you look at, you know, things like voter turnout, community involvement, things like that, college-educated people are all mm-hmm. participate at higher levels, right? So we know that college education is good for our democracy because, and not just voting, but because college-educated people really are doing stuff in the community, you know,
yeah.
democracy at the ground level. So we know that this is a good, but I think we can have an even bigger impact if we're more intentional about it. And so, you know, if we take a history course or we take an environmental science course or we take, you know, a religion course or a sociology course, and we use those in a general education program, and we use those as opportunities not simply to explain those disciplines or their content to the students, which is typically what we think of when we think of those courses.
Right.
But to show those students the way in which these disciplines can help us grapple with problems we have today, problems uh-huh. in our democracy, problems in our environment, problems in the global economy, problems in Syria or Egypt or whatever. I mean, one of the things that students often, we did a recent survey on our religious studies program, and we surveyed students and alumni. And we actually did really well. I'm very proud of our religious studies program here. But one of the things that a number of people said was, you know, the relevance of what we're studying to the things in our world today. And I think that as faculty members, we often are fully committed to the relevance of history to what's happening in the world today.
I think that's true.
You know, but we often are not very intentional about making those connections with students. And
well, I'll tell you, you know, there's an almost constant barrage of, why do I need to know this? Will my employer
right.
ask
Absolutely.
Me when the Normandy invasion was? And these kinds of questions.
Yeah. Right. Now I would say that there is a lot of research out there, and there's, you know, there's these yearly surveys of business leaders that are done, and when business leaders are asked what they look for in an employee, they look for people who can collaborate with others,
mm-hmm.
think outside the box, analyze problems, write well, communicate well. I mean, those are all things that ideally you would imagine, you know, just about any class can be working on, you know, any course. And if you look at some of the key values that are required in a democracy, you find that those are
a lot
of
the same things.
There are a lot of the same things. And instead of imagining that, well, there's all these skills and capacities that students need to be successful in their careers, and some really are very, you know, career specific, right? I mean, when mm-hmm. when I go to get my blood drawn, you know, it's great if the nurse has studied Shakespeare, but I hope she's learned how to draw my blood, you know. And so there's some of that, right? But at a sort of bigger level, what employers are saying, the sort of skills and capacities, especially business leaders, are saying that they want very much overlap and in some cases are identical with the sorts of things we want in a citizen,
right?
In a democracy. And so it's, there is something to look when you get down to nitty gritty and you're trying to polish off that last 3, 6, 9 credit hours for a student to graduate. You can sometimes get to points of contention about what we're going to ask of students. But by and large, there's so much overlap that it really isn't an either or. We can do both. And it's really a matter not so much of completely separate courses or programs of study, but more about intentionality and thinking more about what we want our classes to do.
That's great. That's great. Well, Doc, I really appreciate your taking this time
to talk to us. Hey, it's good talking to you.
And I'm sure our listeners will get some good food for thought out of this.
Well, I appreciate the chat.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu. That's cat.xula.edu. Until next time, this is Ray Lang.